This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. Today we're talking about a new investment made by the Mind Trust and United Way to help support different summer programs across Marion County this year. And we'll talk to school and community leaders who explain why they're so important. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call 866-476-3881. Just give us your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a high-quality voice message with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. And we're joined now by three guests today. Brandon Brown is the CEO of Mind Trust. Hi, Brandon. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much for having us.
We have Crystal Struben, president and CEO of At Your School. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, so glad to be here talking about this important topic.
Thank you. And also Kiana Warren, principal of Purdue Polytechnic High School North. Hi, Kiana. How are you?
Hello, doing well here, and it's an honor to be here.
Thank you all so much for joining. I really appreciate it. An important discussion today as education has changed so much in this past year here. Brandon, can you first off talk about, you know, what the Mind Trust is for people that don't know it and the work that you do?
Yeah, that sounds great. So we were originally founded in 2006, so we're almost 15 years old at this point. And our mission is to ensure that all kids in our city have access to a great school. We work to accomplish that through a variety of ways. One is we work to launch new schools. Two is we support existing schools across the city. And three, and perhaps most importantly, we work to engage our community. And really over the last 10 months in particular, we have noticed that our work has had to shift dramatically, knowing just all the challenges that many of our students and families are facing. What I would have said 1 year ago is just very different than what we're doing right now. And it's just really important to us that we continue to learn from our community and try to be as nimble as we can to meet those needs.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has had to, you know, really, again, that word pivot, but we all did, and we've all had to, you know, just make so many adjustments. Can you talk specifically about why the Mind Trust and the United Way decided to invest in summer programs this year?
Yeah, so the vision for this actually probably started last summer when we were having conversations with educators, school leaders, many families around school reopening. And you know, this conversation both locally and nationally became really divisive and actually continues to be very divisive. And what we heard from families is that there really wasn't a uniform view around whether or not schools ought to reopen in person. And what we found is that it was really important for community organizations like the Mind Trust to listen to that feedback and to make sure that we were supporting schools and school districts that might not have had the opportunity to meet the needs of every single family. So when a lot of schools just a few months ago chose to start completely virtually, we knew that there was going to be a large number of kids and families in our community, many marginalized families, that needed a place to go in the school day to really receive support to make high-quality virtual learning really possible. So we launched community learning sites across the city just a few months ago to kind of meet that need, to really have a safe, caring, structured place for kids to be able to be during the school day if they didn't have an in-person school option. And what we found during that process was that there are amazing neighborhood-based organizations across our city who do an exceptional job working with families every single day. And we have found that many of them have chosen to step up and meet this really critical need at this very challenging moment. So then that got us thinking, well, we know that learning loss happens over the summer in a normal year. We know that those inequities are just going to be exacerbated with all the challenges that our families have had to face over the last handful of months. So what can we do now in January to do a proactive planning process to ensure that kids have access to high quality education over the summer, knowing how important it's going to be to really try to accelerate learning as we head into next school year? So really the vision for this is to start the planning process now, a community-wide effort, to really make sure that schools and school districts and organizations across Indianapolis are working together to really try to provide high quality options over the summer for kids.
Yeah, because you know, we know that the learning loss on so many different levels, like you said, the disparities are just all over the place, and programs have been, you know, taking all different kinds of responses, and the community involvement is key. Crystal, can you talk then about the kind of work, I would imagine community work, that at your school does?
Sure. So AYS stands for At Your School. We've been around for 40 years. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary, and we partner with school districts across central Indiana to provide high impact programs in a safe environment that complement the school day learning and bring peace of mind to parents. So at AYS, our programming is focused on literacy, math, STEM, and social emotional learning. And we offer this during before and after school hours, during school breaks, and then also during the summer. So in a typical AYS program, kids get a healthy snack, participate in high engagement activities, they get time to socialize, and this is all done again in a safe environment right inside the school building. Essentially, our job is to help kids go further in their learning and also their individual growth. And we want to be here for parents. So it's really important when school's not in session that programs like AYS are available for families. And during the pandemic, especially, we launched a new model, which was called Liftoff. And it's a full day e-learning support program and also offers after school enrichment. And so we were able to offer this program each time school shut down. So we quickly shift from our after school model to the full day model to make sure we're there for kids and families and to do what Brandon's talking about, really make sure that we're addressing equity gaps and that kids aren't falling behind and have the supports they need.
And you're serving, you know, families here in Marion County, correct? About how many families are we able to reach?
So in a typical school year, we serve over about 3,500 kids in central Indiana. So we're also in some surrounding counties. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, those numbers are a little bit less given the fact that a lot of kids are staying virtual and not necessarily seeking out of school programs. But in a typical year, it's about 3,500 students.
And why are summer programs, again, so important right now during the pandemic?
Well, I would say summer programs are an essential part of supporting kids when school's not in session. So just like after school, summer programs so critical because what happens during the summer is kids often they're just not going to retain as much information. So we know that kids lose about 30% of their literacy knowledge and about 50% of their math knowledge in any given summertime. So it just kids are taking a step backwards. That's even more seen with lower income audiences and also with students who are ethnically diverse. So a white student might not have as many challenges and learning gaps as a student of color or a student in a low income bracket. So I think this is what's really critical is that these programs really help that slide and loss that occurs. But in the pandemic, what we're just seeing is that problem more exacerbated. So it's always there and these programs are always critical, but now we're seeing it even just a light shined on it that it's even more critical than it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Like so many things. Kiana, could you talk a little bit about Purdue Polytechnic High School North and the summer programs that you are able to offer to students?
Absolutely. So Purdue Polytechnic High School is a network of three schools and growing with a mission to increase the pipeline of underserved students who are matriculating into higher education, specifically through STEM. We are in partnership with Purdue University. So the students who successfully complete our program get direct admittance in through the university. And we're really looking to increase the number of women specifically and racial minorities that are getting into Purdue. Mm-hmm. And so within our mission is really a desire to serve underserved students and to make sure they're getting what they need. And so one of the things that we know is there is an achievement gap between students and maybe their more affluent counterparts. And so it's really important that we offer summer programs. So we offer summer school for the students And what's unique about our summer program is it's both for students who are needing to increase the amount of credits they have, but it's also we have enrichment opportunities, whether that be summer camps through Purdue University or just an opportunity for students to have something really fun, meaningful, and engaging to do to mitigate that summer loss. One of the other programs we have is students can actually go to the university and take college courses alongside college students. So we do a lot of things in the summer. But what will look really differently this school year because of the pandemic and just wanting to make sure we're closing those gaps is we anticipate having a few more students enrolled in our summer program, specifically the ones that are targeted for credit recovery.
So you're talking about teens, but you're also able to serve younger children as well, right? Mostly teens then.
Yeah, mostly teens. Yeah, that's right. 9 through 12.
You know, again, just broadly, why is it important that we do look at the summer programs? Because, I mean, you know, like you said, there's such disparity, you know, and some families may be able to, you know, be considering summer camps and signing up for preschool, but others, you know, are going to find a lot of barriers when they're considering this in January and trying to look forward to the summer and make sure they really have a plan. Why do you think it's so important, you know, that we give access to everyone?
I firmly believe that every child, regardless of their zip code or what family they're born into, deserves access to a high quality education. And just living out the true creed of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we know those things can't happen without a high quality education. And it's just the morally right thing to do. And we really stand by our mission. And so, that summertime is just so critical. It's really a good time to start to close those gaps more aggressively.
Yeah. I mean, it really takes a targeted approach. We're going to be talking a lot more about the programs that our three guests are involved in and the work that's going on after school enrichment, looking towards the summer. Brandon Brown joining us, the CEO of the Mind Trust, Crystal Struben, President and CEO of At Your School, and Kiana Warren today with us from Purdue Polytechnic High School North. We will be back after a few minutes here, talking more about community-based summer learning programs. If you have questions or comments for the show, please let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. We're talking today about the impact of summer programs on students during the pandemic. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store and send us your questions or comments, and we'll try to get it onto the show. Again, joined today by three guests, Brandon Brown, CEO of Mind Trust, Crystal Struben, the president and CEO of At Your School, and Kiana Warren is the principal of Purdue Polytechnic High School North. Again, thank you all for joining. Brandon, we'd like to go to you specifically talking about the investment in summer learning programs. What does the Mind Trust and United Way plan on doing with this investment that was recently announced?
Yeah, we are really excited about this. In conversations over the last few months with schools, it's become clear that schools have a ton on their plate right now. And it's hard sometimes to think 24 hours in advance, let alone several months in advance. And it just became clear to us that with a lot of the challenges that have happened academically for many of our kids this year, it's going to take a community-wide effort to ensure that we are working to accelerate learning over the summer heading into next school year. And we can't just assume that schools are going to be able to carry all those challenges on their own. And what we've learned, you know, over the last few months is that, not surprisingly, but many people in our city have continued to step up. And there's something about the ethos of Indianapolis, where we have a big challenge. There are just many people who come together to work to solve those challenges. And I really think that this initiative is no different. So, you know, I was having a conversation before the holidays with United Way, and we were really hearing the same things from schools and many organizations in the community. And we just felt called to step up. So we had that one conversation before the holidays, and then we talked right after Christmas, and then, you know, just a few more times. And it became clear that we had the relationships collectively to really move something forward on a very large scale. So we have each chosen to invest $250,000 in a planning process that will hopefully lead towards a massive initiative over the summer that will be a community-based approach to accelerate learning. And hopefully it will involve schools, school districts, and organizations that serve youth across our city. So again, we're not putting all the onus on schools, but we're really coming together as a community to collectively solve this challenge. And we also are excited about the potential for the legislature to step up in a very big way. So right now, there is the opportunity for a $150 million fund to go to communities that are able to come up with plans to really try to mitigate learning loss that's happened over the school year. Mm-hmm. And we think by starting that planning process now, our community can be well positioned to secure those funds.
You know, I'd like to ask you, how do you think this investment can really help schools and programs across Marion County? I mean, what does that look like, you know, in a perfect world, like if this does work all well?
Yeah, so there was a study a couple months ago from McKinsey, and the estimate was that Black children have lost up to 10 months of learning, and Latino children have lost about 9 months of learning. There was another study from Stanford that actually said there's already been over a year's worth of learning loss. So what we can't do is just continue to do what we've always done, because we knew that a year ago there were already massive inequities. Those inequities have been exacerbated. So we can't go back to quote unquote normal. We actually have to find new and innovative ways to collectively serve our kids. So just for a minute, if we assume that for many of our most marginalized kids, there's been a year's worth of learning loss, that means that we're going to have to redouble our efforts, and we're going to have to change the way that we operate, which means that we can't lose critical months over the summer. We can't just try to get back to normal. We actually have to upend the system and make sure that we're doing things differently, because there are thousands of kids in our community alone who, through no fault of their own, have had obstacles in front of them that have meant that they haven't been able to progress academically in the way that they are really able to. So it's our responsibility as leaders in our community to acknowledge those gaps, to step up and to marshal resources and to try to do something creative. So, you know, I don't know sitting here today what this will look like over the summer. What I do know is that we have to do something, and it has to be at a scale that we've never done it before.
Mm-hmm. Can you, and I know it's many of these factors have been exacerbated, but can you talk about some of the barriers that, you know, systems traditionally face and how, you know, that's differs so much from one community to another and makes it difficult for them to plan in advance and makes it difficult for them to, you know, have a community engagement that's really necessary around systems. Just what are we seeing here? Just give people a scope.
Yeah. So one example is we've really asked our K-12 education system not just to be education experts, but now they have to be health experts, right? Like, we are asking principals to be contact tracers. We are asking schools to make decisions on reopening, which really means, right, that they have to become scientists all of a sudden. And for a system that we already were asking a lot a year ago, we are now asking for so much more without commensurate resources and support to make that happen. So we've put such pressure on an already strained system that was already having challenges. And now we're asking them to do more and to become experts in fields that they weren't trained in without resources and without support to make that happen. So of course, many schools are not going to be successful in that context, right? Because they weren't really set up for success, you know, which is just one reason why this is going to have to be a multi-sector approach. And we can't put all the onus on one system, because there are many systems that are stressed right now, And when we talk about inequities, right, it's not just an achievement gap academically, but there are racist systems across our society that exacerbate many of the K-12 gaps. So if we don't take a comprehensive approach that's really systemic, then we're never going to meet the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Crystal, can you take us back a little bit and talk about what it was like for school and program leaders to plan their summer programs when the pandemic hit? I mean, again, we all had to change so much.
Right. Well, it was a challenge on many, many fronts. I think for us, especially, we operate in school buildings. So when school buildings closed down, that prevented and created a huge gap in where would we offer programs for kids and where would kids go. So that was quite an obstacle to overcome. We were able to get back into school buildings by July, but there was a whole month then that kids were, not to mention the period of time that kids were out of school, but also before really summer enrichment could even begin, there was a huge gap there. Certainly families were scared, understandably, and very tentative about sending their kids to a program. So just getting our safety protocols in place and helping educate and helping families understand that we could provide meaningful and high impact programming in a safe environment. That was an obstacle. And then of course, you know, the pandemic just changed everything for what is normal. So no more field trips. And what is summer normally like, that we had to completely reinvent what a high impact fun summer camp could look like when you can't touch each other and you can't stand close, you know, close together, and you can't go anywhere. So, and I think we did a pretty good job, but those were definitely some of the barriers. But I would say, you know, youth programmers and youth educators, that's our job. We have to, you know, we take something that is impossible and turn it into something that's pretty special. So it's just part of the job.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know, you touch on a little bit and, you know, ask your opinion on the importance of, you know, just all types of summer programs. You know, of course, academic is what we're focused on right now, but that recreational and social aspect of, you know, some of these programs are just as important.
Right. And I think that they can both be achieved. So really high quality after school or out of school time program does have an academic component to it. It's just kids don't always know they're learning something. So we used to call it sneaky learning. You know, we're teaching them skills and doing fun projects, but it's still keeping their brain working and helping tap into some things that they learned during the school year, still taking advantage of opportunities to do math and to read just as you do in your basic everyday life, but in making it fun for kids. So I think that's really important. And I would say, in my view, any program that's being offered when school's not in session for summer or just after school, always social emotional learning is very critical. A lot of kids, you know, when they're isolated from their school community network, they lose a huge part of their social network. And so just having kids participate in a program allows them to be supportive and learn about themselves and grow in ways that help them survive and thrive in community. So I think any after school program really does need to look at that social emotional support and accentuating the things that kids need to know just to be good humans.
Mm-hmm. I like to get some sneaky learning in on my kids whenever I can. Kiana, if you could talk a little bit from your experience, what was it like having to adjust to last year's summer programs with COVID in mind? You know, what did you learn from those experiences?
Well, just a lot of really great learning. So we're, as our name hints at, we're polytechnic. So we're a technical school. So the technology already existed for us to be able to transition to distance learning. Virtual learning. Our students were already one-to-one. So we had all of that going for us. But it was still quite challenging. So I'll say in March, that was when we had to go 100% virtual, and we had to transition, and we had to make sure students had food and they had access to love. And a lot of our students receive, so schools don't just give academics. We also provide counseling, mentorship, food, nutrition, all of that stuff. So we had to make sure all that stuff transitioned. And we had to transition that within a week. So it was a week. We were told the very next week, the following week, that we had to go virtual. So there was a lot of prepping. I think one thing we were told in March, hey, we'll be back after spring break, and we weren't. And so that was a bit of a shift too. And we were like, certainly we'll be back by the summer, because our summer school for PPHS starts in June, but we still were virtual during that time. And so we had to do some professional development for our teachers on what it looks like to have really high quality learning through the computer. It's different. We had to look at our schedule and look at when it makes sense to do a mix of synchronous and asynchronous learning, because it's just not healthy for a student to sit in front of a screen for 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. We had to make sure that we were very, very intentional about our special education services. My school serves about 25% of our students considered special education. So we had to make sure their services were continued to a high quality. And so whether that meant doing OTPT, there were so many things to plan. And then going into our summer school, we really had to look at how to make it engaging, the right amount of time to have kids in front of the computer so we get in that sweet spot of supporting them. One change that we made is we increased the number of one-on-one tutoring support we received. Really grateful for our partnership with Purdue University. A lot of the in-service teachers became tutors for our students, and we're able to work with students in 1-to-1 or 3-to-1. And so that support was really beneficial for our students. And so one of the biggest learning we have, our model is naturally really innovative. It's very hands-on, project-based. Mm-hmm. We had to figure out ways to get students to work on projects through a computer. So that meant sending students Amazon packages with their material for their projects and things like that. So we had to get very, very creative. And I think overall, we just learned to be really, really flexible, even more than we thought was possible. And just a huge shout out to the teachers who went above and beyond to do what they needed to do. And one last thing that was really great is, as an Indianapolis community, we got together with other school leaders and we talked about how can we make this work. So we didn't worry about competition. We didn't worry about whose students go to which school, but we said we all are responsible for every student in Indianapolis, and let's work together to make sure we can make the best out of this tough situation.
Brandon, you know, you talked about, you know, what the curriculum, you know, may look like, and saying that, you know, you can't say yet necessarily, and that certainly it's going to be different for different schools. Different students have different needs. But why do you think creating a curriculum would be beneficial, you know, for students?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, if this is truly going to be a community-wide effort, it means that schools are not going to be the only vehicle for kids to receive high quality instruction over the summer. So what we can't do is we can't ask community-based organizations to become educational experts overnight. And we really need to make sure that we're being thoughtful around selecting and thoughtfully implementing high quality curricula. One challenge that I think we've already seen and have some initial ideas around how to solve it, our educators are tired, mm-hmm. right? So it is a lot to ask of a teacher that has worked her tail off for months in very trying times to then raise her hand and say, okay, I'm going to teach school over the summer. So we're going to have to get really creative, I think, around how do we staff a massive campaign like this? One idea is, what would it look like to work with schools of education in other teacher prep programs that need real-world experience, residency hours, and how might we leverage that and that incredible pool of great talent in order to serve our kids over the summer? So we've had some early conversations with some schools of education, for example, around how might we work together to make sure that we have a great way to staff up over the summer. Also thinking about, you know, who are those master teachers in our city that would be really excited to take on something like this? And how might we convince them to expand their impact through, you know, modeling what great lessons look like, through, you know, mentoring new staff over the summer? So we don't have all this figured out yet, but I do feel really strongly about ensuring that there's a high quality curriculum that has a plan to be implemented across a variety of contexts. And then also thinking about how do we get creative to make sure that we have the human beings who are ready you know, to implement this over the summer, knowing that a lot of our educators might say, hey, I would love a couple months off over the summer because I'm drained. So, you know, once again, how do we not just put this on our schools and our K-12 system, but how do we all come together as a community across sectors to really figure out some creative solutions?
Well, we will be back after a quick break. We're talking with school and community leaders about the importance of summer programs during the pandemic. If you have questions or comments for our guest today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Or you can send us a voice message without making a call by using our smartphone app called All in Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. That's VOXPOP. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Jill Sheridan. Back now to our discussion on plans for summer programs in Indiana during the pandemic. As always, we would love to hear your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from, 866-476-3881. Again, joined by three guests today. Brandon Brown is CEO of the Mind Trust, Crystal Struben is president and CEO of At Your School, and Kiana Warren is the principal of Purdue Polytechnic High School North. So chatting there, Brian, with you about the curriculum at the end of the last break, and this is a statewide show, so I just wanted to ask quickly, you know, is this, if it does, you know, prove to be successful, something that other communities could possibly model?
Yes, that's the, you know, it's a great question too. The needs are not just in Marion County. And, you know, I think one example of this is if the state's willing to step up and give $150 million to this, those monies would then be available for a lot of communities across the entire state. So while our focus will be mainly on trying to serve kids in Marion County, we do think that there's a lesson to be had here around what would it look like for a community to step up and to go through a community-based long-term planning process. And we really do think that there will be resources on the table, hopefully, to help with the implementation. We also think that there are a lot of things that are happening right now in Indianapolis that we hope to serve as national models. I really think the fact that we have, for example, school districts working with charter schools, that we have a lot of amazing neighborhood groups saying, hey, we will serve kids during the school day. I think it's just been really refreshing the last few months to see how folks across our community have stepped up. So hopefully that spirit can also serve as a model, knowing that we're in a world right now where it would do everybody some good to see more people trying to work together.
Mm-hmm. And we know that, you know, school funding is always an issue in Indiana, and seems with special focus on it this year, Governor Holcomb passing a $377 million increase in K-12 funding in a state of the state last week. You know, thinking about this money and how it always is an issue, we do have a listener voicemail from Edie, who has a concern about what funding is not going towards. So let's take a listen.
This is Edie from Evansville. There are vast inequities in today's school system, and children are losing out on opportunities to learn because charter institutions like the Mind Trust have been pushing the state legislature to drain public school funds in order for charter schools to make a profit. And sounds like from this description that it's a way for the Mind Trust and the Purdue Polytechnic Group to funnel more funds from taxpayers for corporations to do the learning, when it could be going to community schools.
Okay. Brandon, I'll let you go ahead, and I'll let Kiana talk to that as well, because, you know, she's talking about this issue that some people may be concerned about. So your reaction to Edie's concerns.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate the concerns. I'm just not sure where to start, to be honest with you, because there was a lot of misinformation in that question. Mm-hmm. One, charter schools are public schools. So when we're having conversations about strengthening public education, charter schools are just one school type that are one component of a high-functioning school system. Secondly, charter schools get less funding than traditional public schools. Actually, in Indianapolis, that's $7,000 less per kid. Charter schools also serve high numbers of African-American students and Latino students, higher than school districts. So when we're talking about the inequities in our education system, there are inequities. There are racial inequities around how we fund students, and we shouldn't discriminate against students just because they attend one type of public school that we may not like. So I appreciate the comments, but I do think there's a lot of misinformation that swirls around, and it's important that we all have a collective set of real facts, and then we can have conversations based on those facts.
Because the goal is to provide quality education to everyone, and I know, you know, that that is a mission of yours. And Kiana, if you wanted to respond as well to that concern, we know that you're trying to reach a number of different students.
Yeah, Brandon said that really well, as he emphasized, our school does serve a majority of low-income students and a majority students of color. We do receive less funding than traditional district schools, but we are a public school. And our network of schools even partner with our district. And so we're collaborative and we're all in this together.
So going on, you know, talking about the school programs this summer, Crystal, I'm going to have you jump in. You know, what is at your school planning for the programs this summer? What might that look like?
Sure. So we are looking at summer programs in some key school districts in the Indianapolis area. And our main point will be to partner with school buildings and offer a robust summer program. We'll be looking at collaboration with other partners and also funding sources to keep those costs low to families. I think the interesting part about running an effective summer program is it costs about $300 a week per student to really have an effective high impact program where you have highly trained staff and good activities occurring and kids are getting fed and all those things. But that is not a cost that a parent can necessarily afford and could leave a lot of families out. So it's really important for us to collaborate on funding opportunities. We're working on a marketing assessment to make sure we understand what it is that parents need in this time and what would help support school districts as well. So again, that we're working on the summer learning loss during our programming. But for us, we'll be focused on project-based learning this year. So I think Kiana talked about that earlier, but essentially for us in the summer camp setting, it would mean that for each week, there would be some type of theme. Kids would work on a project that whole week, and then at the end would have some kind of a culmination activity. And then if we're doing it really well, each of those projects build on each other over the summer. So it gives kids a really good experience and a way to collaborate and work with one another during the summertime. So that's what we've got going on. We'll be launching our promotion of summer camps here in the next couple of weeks, and then keeping our safety protocols up to par will also be really important. So we're constantly reviewing those, and then we have safety information on our website that helps parents understand. And I just encourage other providers out there that are working on their summer programs. It's really, really important for parents to understand how we're keeping kids safe and making sure we're all working on best practices together.
I mean, because really, a lot of times it comes down to money, you know, for families that can't afford a high quality educational programs sometimes, especially during the summer. Can you talk a little bit about where At Your School does get its funding?
Sure. So our model is really based on 70% of revenue is earned revenue from parent fees. So parents pay a fee to come to the program. About 10% comes from public funding and 20% from private donors. So luckily, there's some great funding sources out there, especially for families that are up to 127% of poverty. FSSA offers programming and child care vouchers that help families pay as little as zero and for their summer or after school experience. But I would say where one of the biggest challenges comes in is those families that are just at that 200% of poverty and lower. That's where the biggest gap exists, because you've got families who can afford to support after school and summer, that it's just part of their budget. They do it, it's built in, but then you have this big group of people in the middle that just, it's probably just out of reach for them. And so that's why we really rely on groups like the Mind Trust and Lilly Endowment and Indiana After School Network. We've got a lot of partners out there. The Marion County Commission on Youth is often working on these issues and trying to make sure summer programming is accessible. So to kind of touch on what Brandon said earlier, I mean, I think this is really an opportunity when you talk about stemming equity gaps in education and you talk about access for kids. State agencies, often we all operate kind of in a silo. You've got state agencies supporting different parts of support for families. Some are providing child care. Some are providing education support through, you know, the Department of Education. Then you've got nonprofits who are out there. And this is really, I think, an opportunity to really form more public nonprofit partnerships and to look at those funding sources in less of silos and more collectively. Because when we can match up after school programming, summer programming with educational outcomes that we're trying to achieve, you could create a whole lot more economies of scale. You have less burnout among teachers. You have more synergies among, you know, universities and private nonprofits that can all come together to wrap around kids versus kind of looking at everything in a very siloed or singular manner. So I think one of the benefits that's come out of COVID is there is a lot more collaboration happening. And I think when groups like the Mind Trust and United Way step up, we see that, you know, big things can happen. And like Brandon said, we have to look at this differently. We have to look at Indiana as, what do we want kids to achieve in the end? We've put a lot of energy around preschool funding, which I think is amazing. And we're doing a lot to try to step up how we support teachers in the state. School age kids, there's a big gap there from when you start preschool to when you graduate from high school. And if we can really wrap around kids through their entire experience, by the time they hit ninth and 10th grade, they've got that security. They have the supports they needed and they're really positioned for success. So I think we've got a lot of work to do, but I'm excited about what is happening in the state.
Brandon, you know, you mentioned the potential $150 million fund. You know, what are next steps with that? And what is the state, is the state doing enough to help summer programs right now?
Yeah. You know, so the goal that we have over the summer is to ensure that this programming is completely free for kids, because we know that there are major equity gaps when it comes to accessing high quality programs. So we don't want resources to be any kind of entry barrier. And this is why it's so critical that the state step up. It's so critical that nonprofits and philanthropy alone can't shoulder this burden. But think about the power of nonprofits like United Way and the Mind Trust and the philanthropy that we can bring to the table. In collaboration with a major state level of investment, we think that's really the magic around what we're trying to make happen. You know, and again, there's a history in Indiana for cross-sector collaborations like this being very successful. I think in terms of school funding overall, look, schools need more money. Mm-hmm. Schools are being asked to do a lot, and that's not just true right now. That's true in general. What we also know is that the state of Indiana has done a very good job managing state finances. So when we look at how we're doing as a state relative to a lot of our neighbors, we're actually in a relatively strong spot, which is why the governor can call for over $300 million more in school funding. And it's why a lot of our neighboring states, you know, are just having conversations right now around how can we stem cuts. So I do think that the state is in a relatively good position to weather the storm. And if we're going to make any increased investments, we need to make them in education, because we know that we have equity gaps. We know that we're not doing as well as we could. And all of those challenges are just exacerbated right now. Though I am hopeful that a lot of leadership at our state level sees this challenge and is ready to invest.
Kiana, could you maybe talk about, you know, what we're talking about here, the achievement gaps, the learning loss that so many students are disproportionately experiencing. What are educators seeing with their students? You know, as this is happening?
We're really seeing the exact same things where the data is showing us disparities among subgroups. But the exciting news is we know with high expectations, high quality pedagogy and all that stuff, we know we can close these gaps. Educators are excited to just wrap around the students. And just as Brandon talked about, schools do need the resources to provide for the students. We're just really excited about these programs that will help begin to close those gaps.
Crystal, I might ask you to weigh in, you know, maybe a silver lining from the pandemic, and Brandon touched on this, is that, you know, programs and nonprofits and organizations and public and private entities seem to be working a little bit more cohesively. We're getting out of our silos a little bit. Have you experienced that?
Absolutely. We've worked with several other nonprofit organizations that serve kids to help figure out how to get quality programs running during the summer. For instance, Early Learning Indiana, the YMCA, and AYS sat on several work groups to try to figure out how we could pop up programs during the very beginning of the pandemic to offer essential care to essential workers. And I think that has just expanded over this time. There's a lot of nonprofit groups that meet through the United Way that help facilitate conversation around topics and meet on a regular basis. So I see a lot of activity going on and seeing the city even coming into those conversations. So yes, it seems like people are really from all industry, from nonprofit to for-profit in education, really coming together to try to make sure that we are serving the needs of the community. And it's working well. And I think it's something we can keep building on.
Mm-hmm. I might ask you, Brandon, to have the last word then and weigh in on that sort of idea as well. And us all just coming together.
Yeah. You know, I had never met Crystal prior to maybe 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, now our two teams have regular conversations, and you know, we are working together to figure out how can we combine resources to meet more kids. And I, you know, as a nonprofit leader, I have never been in as many joint meetings with a large number of nonprofits. I've never seen the philanthropic community coordinate to the level that it's coordinating right now. And not only that, but the level of transparency that nonprofits and many of the funders are having, right, about real needs and the philanthropic community's ability to move quickly and to be nimble, it has really been inspiring. And what I'm looking forward to once we get through COVID-19 is how do we take the lessons and the collaborative spirit that are so true right now, and how do we apply them to systems moving forward? Because again, we can't just get back to normal, because that normal was inequitable for way too many students and families in our community and across our state. So how can we make sure that we are continuing the urgency that we see now, continuing the collaborations, and really trying to figure out the innovations that actually might work long past COVID-19? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm really excited about, because that's how our community and our state will take the giant leap forward and not just be okay with trying to return to normal.
Yep. And that's going to have to be our last word. Thank you all for joining today. Brandon Brown, CEO of MindTrust, Crystal Struben is president and CEO of Etcher School, and Kiana Warren, principal of Purdue Polytechnic High School North. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find them where you get your podcasts. I'm Jill Sheridan. Thanks for listening. This is All In.